to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program very much. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 16, 2021. The chief of the UN mission in Sudan says some terms of the Juba peace agreement are yet to be implemented.
This delay hinders the development of the country and affects the external image of Sudan.
And authorities in Unity States say they have arrested two people suspected to be behind the killing of an aid worker last month.
Despite the fact I'm not with them, but I used to communicate with them. Even though I'm not in Punjab, but I communicate with them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Panjir County of Unity State say they have detained two people in connection with the killing of Dr. Louis Saleh, an employee of International Rescue Committee who was killed in Ganyel last month. The county commissioner of Panjir confirms two people are being held for investigations. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Panjir County authorities announced arrest after Health Ministry Undersecretary Dr. Mayen Makuch Achek presented a forensic report to Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lumoro, describing Dr. Saleh's death as a homicide. The report said Dr. Saleh died of repetitive cut to the neck and stab wounds to the arms. Panjir County Commissioner Colonel William Gadjek Mabor says the two suspects, both of whom were watchmen at the IRC compound in Ganyel Payam, are being held in police custody. He says the case is now in the office of the President Salva Kiir and Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lumoro. In a statement released on Monday, Minister Lumoro said the national government deployed security forces to apprehend all suspects involved in Dr. Saleh killing. It said the national government would ensure that the perpetrators involved in the case would face justice. But County Commissioner Mabor tells South Sudan in Focus the national government has yet to send any investigation team to Panjir to investigate the circumstances under which Dr. Saleh died.
Up to now, there is no team going to Panjir. I don't know why. And Panjir, they are not wild. They are not animals. They are human beings. Even me, as a person, I'm talking to you now. I'm not happy the way that doctor died. I cannot support that such of incident, but I need the procedures to be taken.
Mabor says the people of Panjir County are ready to receive and cooperate with a national investigative team.
When I hear that incident, I contact the office of the IGP immediately, and then I ask them for as expert for CID to go together with those of NGOs, and I connect them with the NGOs, the country director of IRC. In afterward, they fail to connect themselves with.
Mabor criticized national government officials for issuing a statement indicating the late aid worker's death was a homicide when it did not send an investigative team to the area.
I need them to send a team to Panjir, and then they will go to find the genuine information, and then we should come up with a statement. I'm not against of whatever is happened. I'm not defending anyone as I'm speaking to you. Despite the fact I'm not with them, but I used to communicate with them. Even though I'm not in Panjir, but I communicate with them.
Mabor says investigators want to determine whether it was a suicide or an intentional killing that led to Dr. Saleh's death. He says if Dr. Saleh was killed, the perpetrators will be brought to justice. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The head of the United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan says he is worried about delays in implementing important provisions of the Juba Peace Agreement signed in October last year. The UN official says Sudan's peace partners have yet to integrate various forces. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Speaking at a press conference on Tuesday in Khartoum, the head of the UN Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan, Volker Perthes, said a delay by parties to implement some key provision of the Juba peace deal could contribute negatively to the future of the democratic governance in Sudan. He says For the last 7 months, only a few steps have been taken towards integrating different forces to establish a unified army in accordance with the security arrangements provision. The UN official says the government has failed to form a legislative council, an important wing of any transparent democratic government.
This delay hinders the development of the country and affects the external image of Sudan. And on a political note, what I said applied in the first place to the establishment of the Transitional Legislative Council, which is supposed to play the role of checks and balances for the government and help in building trust in the transitional government.
Under the Security Arrangements Protocol, the Juba Peace Agreement requires various forces to be integrated into one Sudanese National Army. Peart says ignoring such an important provision of the agreement will likely negatively impact the security of the country and as such hinders government programs.
A country cannot be stable while it is allowed to have 3, 4, 5 or more different forces. There is a need to begin a serious discussion and lay a roadmap which will lead at the end of the day and gradually to the formation of one national army that works in accordance with the constitution.
Peart says another important provision of the Juba Peace Agreement is to guarantee the safe return of the refugees and IDPs to their homes. But that cannot happen if Sudanese leaders have not agreed on a unified security arrangement in the country. He says a national joint force should be formed and deployed in war-affected areas to ease the return of displaced persons and to help maintain security.
If these joint forces are established and deployed in Darfur, this will guarantee the Sudanese government's ability and the joint administration to protect the Sudanese citizens at all times.
The joint UN and African Union peacekeeping mission in Darfur ended its mission in December last year. Since then, intercommunal conflicts have been rampant in the area. Peart reiterated the commitment of the mission to assist the transitional government in developing mechanisms and programs that would contribute to smooth transition period and realize good governance in Sudan.
We are ready to help and facilitate this dialogue on the condition that it should be owned by the Sudanese people. It should be inclusive with the participation of all social, religious, cultural, and political sectors of this beautiful land of Sudan.
The United Nations Security Council adopted Resolution 2524 on June 3, 2020, establishing a special political mission aimed at providing support to Sudan for an initial of 12-month period during its political transition to democratic rule. The resolution was granted based on an official request presented by the Sudanese Prime Minister, Abdullah Hamdok. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Arab League foreign ministers met Tuesday in Qatar, focusing on efforts to resolve the Nile River Dam conflict between Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia. Egypt's foreign minister, Saleh Shoukry, says Cairo is seeking a diplomatic and not a military solution to its crisis with Ethiopia over the filling of the Great Renaissance Dam on the River Nile, set to begin at the start of next month. For VOA News, Edward Iranian reports from Cairo.
Arab League head Ahmed Abul Ghait and Qatar's foreign minister Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman bin Jassim Al Thani talked to journalists Tuesday after Arab League foreign ministers met in Doha. They said the group is calling on the UN Security Council to take up the water dispute between Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia. The League is trying to prevent a conflict when Ethiopia begins to fill the Grand Renaissance Dam again next month, despite the absence of a water use agreement with Egypt and Sudan. Mediation efforts by the African Union have not made any tangible progress, and both Egypt and Sudan have expressed concern that their national security will be adversely affected if Ethiopia proceeds with filling the dam. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sama Shoukry told Arab media Monday that Cairo is still trying to exhaust all diplomatic channels with Ethiopia before resorting to other means. He says Egypt is trying to reach a solution within the current negotiating framework, but if it fails and there is damage or a threat to the lives of Egyptians or Sudanese, then both countries have a responsibility to defend and protect their people. Sudan's irrigation minister, Yasser Abbas, told a press conference Monday in Khartoum his country would approve the filling of the dam if Ethiopia enters into a binding agreement with both Sudan and Egypt. He says Sudan is ready to accept a step-by-step agreement with Ethiopia if it will sign an accord including everything that has been agreed upon until now, including a guarantee that negotiations will continue within a finite period of time. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who repeatedly has insisted the filling of the dam will continue as scheduled at the start of July, said recently, his country was not trying to use the dam to pressure its neighbors. He says the dam is a sign of Ethiopia's independence, and through it, we affirm that we have no behind-the-scenes colonialist project to use against our neighbors. He added that Ethiopia is a proud, independent country and will continue to be so forever. Egyptian political analyst Said Sadik tells VOA that Ethiopia's ruling party has been using the dam negotiations for internal political considerations, including uniting disparate ethnic factions within the country and rallying support for ahead of upcoming elections. He also believes Egyptian leaders will exhaust diplomatic means before taking more forceful action.
Egypt is hesitant to jump into a war before fulfilling all the diplomatic channels so that anything that is done, at least we have legitimate international coverage. Or we went through the channels of solving the international problems peacefully and we had faith.
Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University in Washington, tells VOA this is a very delicate and treacherous moment for negotiations and that the situation could become inflamed if Ethiopia tries to fill the dam too quickly, causing water shortages in Egypt and Sudan. The situation is coming to a head, and what happens in the next few weeks could determine a lot, he adds. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, inmates receive life-saving training. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's a bad habit that you have struggled to give up?
Bad habit. I love sleeping a lot. Yeah, that's my bad habit. I love sleeping. Sometimes I fail to catch up on time because of sleep.
That habit of being jealous to my wife, yes, that one. I've tried to be to control myself so that I should not be jealous of her, but I do fail.
A short temper, because I think that it is a genetic, so I can not give up.
I tend to overreact when my kids do something wrong, and I end up regretting the consequences of my actions after giving them too tough punishments.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Inmates who graduated with diplomas and certificates in vocational skills this week say they will use their new talents to improve their livelihood and contribute to the development of their communities once they leave prison. South Sudan's Minister of Interior urged the inmates to make good use of the skills they have learned while in prison. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
178 inmates graduated on Monday from the National Prison Services Vocational Training Center at Juba Central Prison. The inmates were trained in a wide range of skills, including information technology, hairdressing and beauty therapy, food processing, bakery, carpentry and joinery. Other prisoners received training in welding and metal fabrication, tailoring and garment cutting, electrical installation, auto mechanics, agriculture, plumbing and building construction. 24-year-old Sunday Marco, who was trained in mechanical engineering, says she was arrested and sentenced to 20 years in prison in connection with the death of her husband, a soldier who was murdered at a military barracks. Marco says she was accused of hiring people to kill her husband because her accusers said she was seeing another man. Marco, who expects to be released in 2033, says for the past 7 years she has been in the prison, she has gained skills on auto mechanics.
I can change engine oil. I can change shock absorber. I frequently train at the garage here, and I want, if I get out of the prison with my certificate, I want to work in a garage as I like. I want to work in my own country because there are few women and the majority of the mechanics here are foreigners.
34-year-old Fedela Abui, an army soldier, says he was sentenced to 7 years in prison after being found guilty of releasing a detainee even though he was off duty on the day the prisoner escaped. Abui says he was ordered to serve in the place of the prisoner who escaped. Abui, who has now spent 4 years in prison and due to be released in 2024, says he wants to be a tailor rather than serve in the military again.
In the training that I did, I can sew clothes, I can cut materials, and when I get out of here, if I get a tailor, I want to be trained more skills so that people like myself can help people. Because this soldiers thing, I see it is consuming time and it is not reasonable anymore.
Sabuni Samuel, the supervisor in charge of the Vocational Training Center, says the United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, provided the center with some materials in 2016. But since then, the center has faced a number of challenges, including a lack of training materials.
We were dependent on what we get very small by the materials, and we continue. That is a big challenge to us. That is a big challenge. As long as you still continue, the numbers continue to grow. We have always a problem in training materials. That's number one. Number two is this pandemic that has locked down the training for six months. It was in March until October, when we have to start it again. And you know, those inmates that are supposed to be benefiting could not now get into getting their complete training because others were already released in the process.
Interior Minister Paul Mayo Makech urged the inmates and former inmates who graduated with vocational skills to use those skills to rebuild their lives and avoid breaking the law and returning to prison.
This is only a beginning of a long process for you. If you have been introduced into masonry, into carpentry, into electrical engineering of some degree, and into plumbing, take that and computer, take it as only a beginning and go further and dig deeper to realize the potentials in your field. The objective of the word correction is to change you from where you came from to a good citizen that will not run into conflict with the law.
So far, 907 people have graduated from the vocational training center at Juba Central Prison since it was established in 2015. The UNDP in South Sudan says it wants to introduce vocational training for inmates in Wau and Malakal prisons as well. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
A report by the International Labour Organization finds 10 years after the landmark Convention on Domestic Workers was adopted, there has been little improvement in their work conditions. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
When the convention was adopted a decade ago, domestic workers were among the most undervalued, invisible members of the global workforce. 10 years later, domestic workers still struggle to be seen and recognized as people who provide an essential service. Data in the ILO report show the world's 75.6 million domestic workers continue to suffer from poor working conditions, low pay, and a lack of social protection. It finds for many, the COVID-19 pandemic has worsened their already difficult situation. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says domestic workers have lost their jobs or had their hours of work reduced in greater numbers than others during the pandemic. He notes many domestic workers are migrants, so their status in the country could be called into question if they lost their jobs.
Many domestic workers live in employees. They could lose their lodgings where they live if they lose their job as well. So behind the aggregated numbers, I think there is a sort of a deeper human impact which accentuates even more the suffering involved in the labour market impact on them of the COVID-19 pandemic.
The ILO reports domestic work remains a female-dominated sector, accounting for three-quarters of domestic workers worldwide. Ryder says women comprise more than 80% of those working in the informal sector, which makes them more prone to exploitation and abuse.
Informal employment is characterized by poor working conditions, a lack of protection, and so we find that the vulnerability of many domestic workers earning their living behind closed doors in private households is that vulnerability is magnified by this condition of informality.
Ryder says the crisis highlights the need to formalize domestic work to ensure their access to decent work and laws that can protect their rights. The report finds women make up most of the workforce in Europe, Central Asia, and in the Americas. However, it notes men outnumber women in Arab states and in North Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa's intensive care unit are full of patients battling to survive COVID-19, a third wave of the pandemic driven by a highly infectious variant has sent deaths spiking, especially in Gauteng province, home to the country's most populous city, Johannesburg. Emergency service personnel and hospitals say they are overwhelmed, while scientists are concerned that the third wave is proving to be more worse than the previous COVID-19 outbreaks. For VOA News, Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
The surge in coronavirus casualties has forced hospitals to suspend non-life-threatening surgery and admissions as they desperately try to reserve a limited number of beds for COVID-19 patients. Chief Director of Gauteng Health Services, Macy Relutla, insists though that everything's under control, despite a 100% increase in hospitalizations over the past few weeks.
We have almost three times the number of patients that we had a month ago. And with that, we have made available COVID beds and we continue to reallocate the beds as the need arises.
But speaking on condition of anonymity, some of Lerutla's doctors told VOA, you can't reallocate what doesn't exist. The situation's made more dire by the closure of one of Gauteng's major hospitals, Charlotte Maxeke, in Johannesburg, due to a recent fire.
The closure of Charlotte Maxeke, it has knocked out 300 to 400 COVID beds from the health system in Gauteng, and that has put the entire system under pressure.
Dr. Farid Abdullah is a director at the South African Medical Research Council. He says the only way to save lives now is to somehow find extra beds at hospitals across the province.
For that, we need two things, really. One is additional nurses so that more beds can be opened up. But, you know, you need a good, well-organized machinery with ambulance and emergency medical services so that people can be moved around to where there are available beds. Those people who would have been going to Charlotte Maklaka will now have to go to other hospitals.
But, says Abdullah, this isn't happening and lives are being lost because of grave shortages of nurses, ambulances, medics and life-saving equipment.
An ambulance gets called to a home. EMS personnel are expected to make a very difficult assessment if the patient needs the hospital bed or not, and then to know where to go, and they have a patient in the ambulance and no bed to take them to, trying to find a bed in any hospital. It's an extremely difficult situation. As you know,
he's asking the government to provide emergency funding to buy, equip and staff ambulance services as soon as possible. But the state says its focus is on ensuring a speedy rollout of vaccines as it tries to make sure people don't need ambulances or hospital beds. Abdullah says South African EMS personnel are doing amazing work with very limited resources.
Our emergency medical services are able to transport patients with a transport ventilator. You know, you can imagine how difficult that is to do. You have to be completely covered in PPE because the patient is COVID positive. But you also have to manage a very sick patient who's in respiratory distress on a ventilator, moving them from one hospital to another. So we have the capacity, we have the expertise, but we need more organization, we need more resources, we need more personnel to do this now. And
an association of doctors, the Progressive Health Forum, says the third wave is going to be deadlier than previous waves, mainly because South Africans aren't sufficiently vaccinated. The government acknowledges only about 1% of targeted immunizations have happened, but says its vaccine program will go faster in the next few weeks. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you today. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We now leave you with the song Yala Kitautu by Victoria Ole and Kasang Dedi.
Kitautu, kitautu, kelini najere, ni najere, kelini najere, ni najere.
We've been listening to Victoria Ole and Kasang Dedi with the song Yala Kitautu. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.